that voice.
It's a fascinating new voice.
It is a fascinating new voice. That is.
Hey guys, Collector, come into this quadrant.
That's awesome. That's horrifying and awesome. Alright, we're gonna start the show. Are you ready? I think you're warmed up now. I think you.
I'm ready for the show to start.
Oh, God. It's gonna be a long night. It's gonna be a long hour.
It's gonna be a long hour. We're talking about The Outsider.
Oh, God. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going for it. It's fine. Welcome to A Kids Comics. This is issue 151. Thank you for listening to 150 episodes. I guarantee you this episode will be just as entertaining as those, because apparently we've got a new character that's going to be joining us.
We've got a friend character. No.
Does this character have a name? Does he have a name yet?
He is actually Mikai the Juvenile God.
Mikai the Juvenile, yes.
Mikai the Juvenile God. Mikai the Juvenile God was a younger, he's sort of the younger set of elder gods, like the Guardians, or not the Guardians, but like the, like the Collector and the the Champ and all those guys. And he aspires to be like the Collector.
Okay.
But knows that he is simply a Collector.
So he's like the, when the Collectors all get together, he's the one that's always trying to get in the group. Like,
yeah, he kind of like shows up and really wants to be, you know, in on all that, and you know, he wants to have some of the stuff they've got.
So, and he brings what he has, but it's just not up to par.
Yeah,
you know,
he'll come to the giant, you know, elder god swap meets and stuff. He just doesn't have the goods, you know.
He's like, "Hey guys, look at this!" And they're like, "That's great, Mikai."
We've all got one of those.
They just kind of humor him.
But it's a shrunken planet. It's a shrunken planet, like a planet that's been shrunk. We've
all got. You know what you're describing right now is the origin story of a villain. That's what you're describing right now. Mikai becomes some sort of villain.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh.
That's sort of a little foreshadowing there, but we're not here to talk about Mikai the Juvenile God.
At least not 100%. We're here to talk about The Outsiders. So this is Hey Kids Comics 151. I'm Andrew Farmer, as always. With me, as always, is your co-host and Professor Emeritus of Comics, the Jedi Cole Houston.
The creator. Of new characters,
the curator of a museum of macabre in his mind,
and the portal through which these things happen, we bring in more and more.
It's like a Lovecraftian weird. There's a upside down pentagram in his brain that opens a portal to some place that should never be touched and.
Some strange. I mean, you think the places that Doctor Strange goes, right. The mindless one, all running around. No, I have the mindful ones. That's really,
the problem.
They're actually more annoying because the mindful ones are constantly like, "Are you okay? Do you need anything?" Shut up! I just got here.
Let Dad take his coat off before you start in.
Yeah, right. Would you like a? I don't want a drink. All right, let me alone.
But yes, tonight we're doing Hey Kids Comics Team Up, which we've done quite a few of these now.
Yes, indeed.
And this one...
Actually,
go ahead.
As Hey Kids Comics Team Up, this is HKC Team Up number 7.
Wow!
This is our 7th Team Up where we talk about the superhero teams.
I like this one. This was Cole's idea, and this one's a bit of a deep track, and I like it. It's not totally obscure, but it's definitely more obscure than I think any of them we've talked to up to this point. I really like the team here, and I've always been drawn to this particular team, and that team being the Outsiders. Batman's the Outsiders, or sometimes Alfred's the Outsiders, or sometimes Dick Grayson's the Outsiders, and even more often, sometimes Geo-Force's the Outsiders. But
yeah, it was one of those titles where we're calling this, you know, The Outsiders, because ultimately that's what it was. But the original title, it's Collector's Item First Issue, it it started its life as Batman and the Outsiders.
And it has a really interesting story origin that couples really interesting. And the thing that really drew me in, because we actually put this episode off for transparency's sake for a couple days because we were going to jump into it with the knowledge that we had. And then I started doing a little surface research, and it got really interesting.
The more you discovered, the more...
Yeah.
Fascinating the topic became.
It really did, because...
Not that it was lacking in fascination. Really.
But we would have got in there and talked about Batman.
That
itself
makes it more fascinating.
And talked about Markovia and done our normal shtick, and it would have been great. But there is a really interesting undercurrent here, which is the way that the whole thing started, if you haven't... You know, and I'm gonna go ahead and jump right in. The way that the whole thing started, if you don't know, is Batman basically said, you know, boo you to the Justice League because they wouldn't go help him rescue Lucius Fox, who had been kidnapped. So, in true DC fashion, I think DC does this much better than Marvel does. If you look at, like, the birth of the Justice League or the Justice Society or the Teen Titans, they took Batman went off on his own to go rescue this guy, and through a series of serendipitous events, ended up putting together a superhero team on the fly. Essentially, like, everybody was converging at the right place at the right time to form this weird superhero team for the first six issues of Batman and the Outsiders. So he went after Lucius at the same time that Geoforce was getting his powers in Markovia, at the same time that Metamorpho was going to, I believe, try to get cured in Markovia by Dr. Jace, who ends up giving Geoforce his powers. At the same time, Katana was going there to get revenge. At the same time that...
Everyone was just kind of showing up at the same party at the same time without the benefit of some angry demigod.
Right.
Running around inspiring their teaming up.
Avengers. But yeah, so that's really cool. But the question is, you know, and I want your take on this. There are three or four different possibilities as to why this book was actually made. Why this was released. So these are the possibilities as to why Batman and the Outsiders actually came into being, and I want to know your take on
why did they happen? Yes.
Why did this book happen? Not in continuity, but like as an actual event, the book was created. One of them was that Batman was appearing in too many books. I'm sorry. This is why he was pulled off of the Outsiders, because what happens is after that first initial run, Batman leaves the Outsiders. And it becomes Geoforce's Outsiders. We should talk a little bit about Geoforce.
Absolutely, because Geoforce is an interesting character in that you had, he's a like the sovereign lord of Markovia, and to quote, "What's up, Tiger Lily?" It's non-existent but real sounding country,
right?
And the thing about it is that, okay, there aren't many superheroes that are actually rulers of countries, or so conventional wisdom might dictate.
Right.
And until then, you start thinking about a particularly personally popular character. So a character that is a personal favorite of mine, Aquaman, who is the sovereign leader of his country, and spends most of his time not fulfilling said duties.
Or Black Panther, who is the sovereign leader
of his
country.
There we go, another. Yeah, and he spends a lot of his time in other countries beating up people.
Right, or Dr. Doom, who also is a sovereign leader, who spends a lot of his time...
Works if you're a villain as well, yes. So, yeah, I guess it ultimately doesn't become that surprising.
Right.
That the Markovian leader, but I don't know if he was like the active leader. I think he may have been a prince.
He was a prince like, at that like point.
There was a king, seated on the throne, as it were. So he had the kind of the leeway to, he had a little bit of latitude there to go get in adventures.
Well, it's that, and I don't remember which. which classic adventure story it was, where the prince was actually the hero that would go out, like Deflator Mouse or you know, like Zorroian
yes
character, where he would go out and fight crime as the prince, and you know, so this isn't without pedigree. But that being said,
yeah,
I don't know how you have a team with Metamorpho, who is a storied and tenured superhero, been around for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some new to the game players. You've got guys like Black Lightning, who's actually Black Lightning had been around for quite a while. You've got the new players. But how does one of the new players end up as the leader of?
Yeah, he was one of those underrated characters. Yeah, especially a character that didn't previously exist so much. And what's interesting with that particular character with Geo-Force is you had concurrently a character over at the Teen Titans who was a bit of a mystery.
Right.
Who was the turncoat working secretly for Deathstroke.
Right.
And suddenly, in this weird kind of awkward, uncomfortable way, she has a brother who happens to be a prince of a foreign nation. So all of a sudden, you have Terra, who up to this point seemed like a very ambitious young, as far as we knew, American girl. You know, the
quintessential
presupposition there,
right?
Yeah, you know, there was nothing to suggest, and then all of a sudden, here comes this guy wearing almost exactly the same costume.
Yeah.
And we're suddenly led to believe that she's a princess of Markovia, who's, I guess, you know, in this sort of Shakespearean way.
Right.
Turning to evil. And so, to me, there was always this tenuous connection. And they had almost exactly the same costume, except his had a gigantic, awkward GF on it.
Because you had to know it was Geo-Force, right? I mean, there's no question.
I guess there's Geo-Force, so it always seemed kind of strange to me that element of the costume just seemed out of place.
And you're absolutely right, by the way, that what happened was after they repelled the attack on Markovia by Baron Bedlam, which was their very first, that was their Loki, was Baron Bedlam. Somehow he pissed off enough superheroes that they all descended upon him in Markovia. But after they basically overthrew Baron Bedlam's attempt at invasion, Brian Markov, otherwise known as Geo-Force, said, "Yeah, you know, my country just survived an invasion by a supervillain and his army. I believe at this point his father is dead. Yes, he was dead. So he is now the sovereign ruler at the end of this story arc. And what's he do? I'm going to go back to Gotham and learn under Batman to learn how to use my newfound powers and just leave the country to whatever happens. It's fine. I learned
exactly.
I learned from Aquaman. I learned from those that came before me to just give up my seat of power and go. Eventually have to go take it back. But for now, I'm just going to do this. But yeah, so what happens eventually is Batman gets in there, does his thing for the first, I think, 10 issues. It's Batman. Batman doing Batman. And with his team of weird kind of... And the cool thing about... The thing I really liked about the Outsiders from Jump Street was that you had a team of people, and it was almost the pre-Black Ops superhero team. You know?
Yeah, it really was. It predates things like Suicide Squad.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken. And it was sort of the unsanctioned, you know, Batman, like, I'm Batman, I'll do whatever the hell I want.
Right.
And you know, he's going to have his own team. And what's cool is, you know, you have the character of Metamorpho, like we said, who you mentioned earlier, he had a bit of a pedigree. He'd been around a while. And you had Black Lightning. So you have the sort of obscure yet familiar. And then you just heap on a big pile of brand new characters. Some of them I'm more willing to back as good DC characters than others.
Like who, Cole? No, I want it. Now I want to hear this.
Okay, well, you know, Looker. She was like the vibe of the outside.
Wasn't she a vampire at some point? Like, wasn't that her shtick?
Really sure. That may well have been. There was a vampire in Team Titans.
That awful Hot Topic story. Reject.
The Hot Topic of Teen Titans.
That's right.
So you had Looker, who I think her power was like to just
be hot
people, like cloud men's minds and make them do her bidding. I think I saw a panel where she was making these couple of guys just start beating each other up.
Can I read this? Can I read this to you?
Go ahead.
Yes. Okay, so she was a member of what underground civilization known as Abyssia. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting somewhere now.
The Outsiders went to rescue her. She was not a founding member, but I believe she was the next member to join. She was the Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye.
The sophomore
right
class, as it were.
As the Halley's Comet passed over Earth, she overwent a metahuman transformation and became more than conventionally attractive. That's
more than conventionally attractive.
And she did down the road become a vampire. But initially, more than conventionally attractive is her power, apparently.
Indeed.
That's fantastic.
That is amazing.
She has telepathy, telekinesis, psychometry.
Okay. Something other than good looks, then. Okay.
Right, but she has been her most powerful transformative ability is being more than conventionally attractive. Let's just
actually say that much like a transformer, she's more than meets the eye.
Right. But right. Most of her stuff comes from being a vampire. And also being...
Oh, so it was a vampire angle as well.
Yes. Okay. Later she becomes a vampire, but initially more than conventionally attractive. That's what she's got going on for herself.
Okay.
So that's what that is. So you have Looker.
I'm dumbstruck.
I am too. That's a really good superpower. Whoever came up with more than conventionally attractive as a superpower needs a raise, and I'm shocked it's not Jim Shooter. I'm shocked that somebody took that from him. What about the other members?
Yeah, that was the thing. Okay, so you have Looker, I guess, coming in later in the game.
A little later, yeah. Not a lot later, a little later.
Yeah, a little later. We had, let's see here. You've got Katana, who I think is one of the more interesting characters.
I like her. That's a good character.
Yeah, Katana's a nice choice there, because she is a fairly well-rounded character. And they...
Has a soul sword. Let's just, let's get it right out in front.
Put that out on the table there.
Right.
But, you know, she got you... With that, you've got that kind of character who's bringing, you know, some mysticism, some martial prowess.
Right.
A lot of different things to the table. So, she got that going for it. And does actually bring some stuff... you know, it literally does bring an extra element, because, you know, you've got Black Lightning who can, you know, fire lightning. You've got the apparently above average looks.
Above average looks. Let's just get out in front of that.
You've got things like, you know, Metamorpho, who can pretty much do whatever the hell Metamorpho wants to do.
Has to be one of the most powerful characters in the DC universe.
He's like a fractured version of, he's like the love child of Plastic Man and Chemical Kid from the Legion of Superheroes.
Underutilized.
You waited 151 issues to hear me mention Chemical Kid, by the way.
Underutilized, I think, would be the term I would use for Metamorpho almost across the board. A guy that could turn into any element pretty much at will is, you know, plus freaky looks, which is always good for a comic book character, and I don't think has ever been used to his full potential.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, then you have, was it Halo?
Yeah, she was the one that she was a founding member that they rescued, and actually she had to rescue them, because Batman somehow, for the first time ever in his entire life, gets kidnapped while at Markovia.
Yes.
And she's the one that has to come rescue all of them. The Katana, the Metamorpho, the Geo-Force, the Batman, all of them. So she ends up saving the day, is what happens. She has the ability to... I like her power, because she can create... all of her stuff is based on the Roy G. Biv spectrum. So long before Blackest Night, Brightest Day, you had a character that was using this sort of like a prismatic beam from D&D. Yeah, that's where I'm going. Buckle in. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, beholder eyes, like all of that. She would fire different beams of with different colors, depending on the aura, and that's how she got the name Halo, because she would be haloed in these colors that would do like heat and concussive force and light and stasis and tractor beams and Violet gave the sociopathic personality of Violet Harper control of the body. So are we to understand that Halo is kind of schizophrenic? Is that where we're going with this?
That may well have been.
Okay.
Been a long ass while for me.
Okay, that, this is a great. This is a great biography.
A curious character, to say the least.
Somebody over, whoever wrote this biography for this character, because I just pulled it up to make sure I was right, deserves to win some sort of award, maybe a Harvey Award for comic book reporting, because it reads like this: Halo is a gestalt of a human woman named Violet Harper and an Arkale, an ancient energy being resembling a sphere of iridescent light. Used gestalt in a comic book biography. That's awesome. That guy wins an award, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, indeed. That's best use of...
best use of everything. But yes, so she saves the outsiders in that initial salvo that they had to resist. So good for her. Good for her.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I ever liked her. I remember her in the comics. I really like Katana. I don't know if I ever really liked Halo. I think she was a little bit above my head for the time. I think she was a really inventive character with all of the powers and the kind of pseudo like Firestorm-esque multi-personality thing going on.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it was a little above me when I was initially reading it in the mid-80s.
I don't really recall that aspect. But then I wasn't really following it as closely.
Right.
Right. As other titles. I mean, I did get, like, when the Titans, I'm actually using it as flavor art, when Teen Titans and Batman the Outsiders had a crossover.
Which was bound to happen. Let's just...
Yeah, it was bound to happen. And it was, what was neat about it was, you know, went up against, I think, the Fearsome Five or whatever they were.
Right.
And it was just a really cool, you know, to see those two groups, because you had Batman and Robin reuniting. You had the apparently Prince and Princess of Markovia. That may have been where the big reveal came in to explain why his costume was so much like hers. And, you know, I'm just imagining that Deathstroke didn't even so much as bat his one good eye at the revelation there.
You've been waiting a long time to make that joke, haven't you?
I have.
You've been sitting on the one good eye joke for a while.
Yeah, it's... been a long time coming. So.
That's fantastic.
I think that joke actually even predates the show.
It probably does.
Just like one of these days I'll have a comic book podcast, whatever that is, and I can make a joke about Deathstroke batting good eye.
I'm going to hold on to this. I'm going to write it down on a piece of paper and put it in my wallet.
One day.
Eventually.
Have some relevance.
It's fantastic.
In the meantime, fest. So, moving along, that kind of rounds out the initial group, if I'm not mistaken. What's interesting about the Outsiders is I seem to have thought somewhere in the cobwebby past there was something I'd seen. And in fact, in 1976, DC Comics had a title called First Issue Special.
Okay. I remember that.
First Issue Special, I'm not sure the number, number 10 apparently, featured a group known simply as the Outsiders.
Really?
And that Outsiders literally looked like a superhero team you would see in Mad Magazine.
Oh, really? Do tell, Cole. I want to hear this.
Up, and there were some images. My absolute favorite, I'm trying to figure out who these people are. And actually, I don't think they meant for this to be at all serious, I would hope. As the write-up says here, the Outsiders are a close-knit group of people with terrifying teratological deformities, some of which grant a beneficial superhuman abilities.
Really?
Apparently Mighty Mary is just this cluster of bad news, because she's got like the thing kind of orange rocky skin, but instead of people hands made of rock, she has big flippers.
I'm looking at it now. Holy cow. All right.
For some reason, like a normal girl head. You know, she's like, looks like if she wore a trench coat like the thing does sometimes, you'd be in for a big surprise if you,
Oh, why don't I own this comic book? First of all, why don't...
Why have we not had this? You have, like, Lizard Johnny and Harry Larry.
Lizard Johnny!
Apparently, one of the characters is simply Billy.
Well, it's Billy the Big Head Boy.
Billy the Big Head Boy.
And okay. If you look at him, he is a boy with a giant MODOK-sized head. Yeah. I will own this. The next best comic I ever read, this will be... this is going to happen. The team leader
it's almost like if Welcome Back, Cotter, and the X-Men collided.
Welcome Back, Cotter, and the X-Men. That!
It almost has this vibe, like, you know, Professor X is teaching the mutant sweat hog.
Can you, someone listening to this that we know, and that is an artist, I don't care who you are, X-Men, Welcome Back. This is the best idea. You have had fantastic ideas for 150 episodes of Hey Kids Comics. Make no mistake, but I will go on record and tell you that the best idea that you've ever had is a X-Men Welcome Back, Cotter mashup. Because the thing about it is when John Travolta tells him up your nose with a rubber hose, telekinetically, you can do that. That's what I'm saying. Oh, the mental picture that paints for me is fabulous. Okay, that's good. Thank you, Cole, for that.
There you have it. Yeah, I just had to give a little background there on the precursor. So I'm sure that people from the 70s were thinking, what the hell? Batman's teaming up with Scary Larry?
with Doc Scary? Doc Scary.
Mighty Mary and a lot of E names. You got Doc Scary, Harry Larry, Lizard Johnny, Mighty Mary, Billy,
Ronnie.
Kind of seems like he's out of place.
The image for this, the way it, I can't believe I've never heard of this before. I want to do the rest of the show on this. I want to find Joe. I want to find somebody that has been involved in this, and we'll save it for another episode for sure.
Yeah, we definitely have to cover the ciders.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. But yes,
right now we will pledge to do a parody version of World's Finest that DC did a few years ago. I think we will pledge to do World's Funnest and talk about some of the deliberately nonsensical.
Nice. I love it.
Book. So we look for that as a future episode. World's Funnest.
I like that idea. I like it a lot.
And now back to your regularly scheduled outsiders.
Right? Now that we've taken that trip. But yeah, they've had a lot of they've had a lot of turnover in the Outsiders, and a lot of things have happened. They were always sort of a loose team anyway, kind of a confederation of like-minded individuals. I don't think there was a charter like there was in the Justice League or the Teen Titans.
There really was no, it was just, if you should. It's like, when are we going to fight the bad guys? When everybody gets here, it starts, okay?
All right, we'll just wait. Well, and that was the other thing that was really cool about the Outsiders was, and it was almost always this way. They were almost the bail bondsmen of the DC universe, in the sense that what they would do is they would, it was the idea that they would do what the Justice League or the Teen Titans wouldn't do, which the Justice League and the Teen Titans were a reactive force. Something would happen, they would pick it up at the Watchtower, and they would deploy and go do whatever. Now, granted, when you have the Flash and Superman on your team, you can get there pretty fast. But that's what they did. Whereas the Outsiders, kind of as a guiding principle, if somebody escaped from Arkham, or if somebody escaped from Belrive, or if somebody escaped from whatever weird Kryptonian prison, they would go after them before they could cause problems. So that was sort of one of the things that they did fairly regularly was keep tabs on who escaped from where with what and go after them in advance of problems being solved, which also led to storylines of people that were trying to, there were a couple like I believe Freight Train was like this and Major Disaster was like this, where they were actually trying to get their life straight. And, it led to that moral implication of, well, they escaped from prison, but they've turned the other cheek. Do we turn them in? They really haven't done anything since they escaped. Have they done enough time to equal the crime? Do we turn them in? They've helped us with whatever X, Y, or Z problem is now. Do we turn them in for it? So that's a cool little moral implication.
That's interesting, yeah.
That they handled a lot.
Well, I remember, being aware of the adventures of Batman the Outsiders, and later it became, oddly enough, the Adventures of the Outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
Because Batman left in the early 30s of the title.
Batman pulled a Batman, is essentially what happened.
Yeah, well, he basically remembered he is the Knight. And, once you're the Knight, you don't need to really have a bunch of other people, yet he... In many ways, Batman's kind of like Mango from...
You're on fire tonight. I love it.
Because, he's the loner. He's the lone wolf, the lone, the specter of Gotham's underworld. Yet, he craves that team dynamic sometimes. He's like the least likely to join a team, yet he's on every damn team.
Well, what Batman does almost every time, whenever he leaves a team, it's Batman's fault, and then Batman takes his ball and goes home. And it's the same thing that happens here. It happened like, if you remember the Tower of Babylon Justice League storyline, where, you know, his database of how to defeat every superhuman got out, and then, you know, they have to, Batman has to solve that problem, and then at the end he's like, I don't need you guys. Batman, you caused this problem. Like, it's the same thing in this. Baron Bedlam, after being dead, resurrected, and then cloning Hitler. Let me repeat that line. Cloning Hitler in Markovia. Keep in mind, all this time, where is the sovereign ruler of Markovia? Hanging out in Gotham City with Batman. But all this comes to pass in Markovia. Batman knows about it, does not tell Geo-Force or the team about it. So when they find out, they're pissed at Batman for not telling them. And Batman basically says, well, you know, I chose not to tell you because I knew it would cause problems and you guys would want to go seek revenge. So, in light of you guys throwing a fit about this, I'm out of here. Bye.
Yeah, I didn't see you throwing a fit.
Right. So I'm gone. Like I'm kicking out of here. And it was his fault. Like you're the one that you do this every time, Batman. You're the worst. You're the worst.
Yeah. And the thing is, no one will go to the trouble of saying, you know, Batman, you really were getting tired of this.
Right. So that brings us to Batman leaving.
Nobody wants to piss off Batman, you know, because
I think Geo-Force, anytime anybody stands up to Batman, he folds and leaves. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's like Superman stands up to Batman, Batman leaves. Batman's like, I'm just going to go. I don't need you. And leaves. And that's exactly what happened here. Geo-Force stood up to Batman because Batman didn't tell them pertinent information about his home country that he knew. and so Batman left. Now, the question is, and this is what I want your opinion on, because you're wise in the ways of the comic book industry. Which one of these is the most valid in your mind? Because, okay, so Batman leaves. They obviously jettison Batman from the book. You know, at this point, it's Neil Adams, I believe, and Mike Barr. I don't think it's Aparo anymore. I think it's Adams and Barr, but I could be wrong. But Batman gets jettisoned back to the JLA, and leaves the outsiders where they are. So why does this happen as a comic book? And there are three or four going, you know, conventions as to why this happened. one of them is that when Batman was in like five books and they wanted to pare down the books that he appeared in down to, let's say, Detective Batman and maybe World's Finest. The other one is that that they used Batman's star power to you know, get the Rock chasing after Indy, and then Indy can jump out of the way and the Rock continues, you know, get it going in perpetual motion. The third, and I think is the most interesting, is when Batman leaves, it's right at on the cusp, on the brink, in the event horizon of Crisis of Infinite Earths starting.
Oh, okay.
And
that seems very feasible response as well.
Yeah, and as you know, as hardcore comic book fans know, Crisis of Infinite Earths completely changed the continuity of Batman.
Yeah.
Like, they rewrote Batman and Superman hard in those books. And the fourth one is that that Outsiders was doing all right. Justice League was dwindling, so they had to shift Batman back to Justice League for his star power and see if the Outsiders could continue to roll on its own.
Yeah, I think that it's probably largely a combination.
Okay.
All of those, I think, or certainly several of them. You know, I don't think any one of them, because there would have been some official something somewhere. I think it was just like a combination of so many elements that no single one of them contributed at full.
Right.
To the point where, you know, that's why there is no official story, because there are too many competing elements that just sort of, very likely one didn't know the other was happening, in a sense, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that a lot of it speaks to each other. you know, they were getting ready to do Crisis. Batman was in, like, five books. And probably up to, like, eight or nine books when you included cameos in the books that...
Yes, exactly.
...that he was doing. And, yeah, I believe that when they launched, they wanted to launch this book called The Outsiders with street-level heroes in them, because street-level heroes, at this point, we're talking about the mid-80s, were coming into vogue. You know...
Oh, yes.
But
shrewdly, I think DC would have certainly recognized that their corral of street-level heroes, more often than not, never had a life of their own.
Right.
Unlike, say, Daredevil over at Marvel.
Right.
Or Spider-Man. You know, these were characters that were well-established, and, you know, DC had one major... their flagship,
yeah,
street level hero, and ultimately you have you need something to get people on board. It becomes, you know, why bring Phil Coulson back from the dead so you can launch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and make people watch it?
Exactly.
And this was the same effect, only less contrived.
Correct. Absolutely. But, you know, what's cool about it is Batman did leave, but it always stayed a Batman book.
Yeah, I think it had begun its life in the Batman family.
Right.
And so ultimately got to remain, in a sense, part of the Batman family.
Because at different various points... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. But I think what happened was, you know, Batman leaves, and that's a big deal. But they played it up as such a big deal that then it wasn't like, oh, look, it's Batman on his own team. You know, he's leading his own team. Then it becomes, well, where do we go from here?
Yeah.
The lack of Batman becomes an equal hook to the presence of Batman.
That's absolutely true. You're absolutely correct.
That is a fascinating dynamic.
That's absolutely correct. You're very right about that. And immediately what they do is they go back to Markovia with Geo-Force as the leader, because that was the catalyst for Batman's, you know, exit. His egress was that. So they go back after you know, and seek to remove him. Which, you know, okay, good for them. But throughout the history then of the Outsiders, you've had Nightwing, you've had Tim Drake, you've had oddly enough, Alfred Pennyworth, when Batman gets wrecked by time bullets, we love us some time bullets. He leaves special instructions for Alfred to recreate the Outsiders and run it. So Alfred basically becomes Charlie to the Outsiders, Charlie's Angels. Old man Alfred's running things. Cassandra Cain is involved. Catwoman is involved. We're talking about basically a who's who of the Gotham Knights are all involved in the Outsiders at one point or another. So it is very, very staunchly entrenched in the Batman universe as well as the Gotham universe.
Yeah, and I think that certainly cements that whole Batman family approach to things.
Right.
Or, you know, the connection, to say the least.
Right, they had some really interesting villains as well that they got to play with because they got some really cool villains, and also I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the fact that the Creeper was a member of the Outsiders for a while.
Oh my, wow!
I do love the Creeper. I can't get enough of the Creeper.
I really do. I enjoy the Creeper myself. So.
But they had some really interesting villains, because they didn't get they got the Fearsome Five, which was a you know, they got the Fearsome Five. They fought against them quite a bit. Slade Wilson, because you can't have a DC book with fairly young characters without creepy Slade Wilson coming into the fold.
He's
going
to come
point.
In and wreak havoc from time to time.
Right. So do you know of any of the villains they fought? Does anything stand out?
There was a group that was just, I don't know, I know Major Force, I believe, was maybe Major Disaster or something like that.
Yeah.
Major Disaster was a member of the group. It was almost like this, I don't know, it was like the UFOs were to the Fantastic Four. Just kind of silly. You know, in the presentation thereof, anyway.
Right.
It's one of those things where sometimes I think they try a little too hard, and that group was certainly a prime example of that. But, you know, I'm not that familiar, but I did get intrigued because, you know, fast forward enough years, there was a reboot of The Outsiders about 8 or 10 years ago.
Yes.
And I just kept getting more and more intrigued by it, and actually read the first several.
Okay.
And what was really cool about the reboot of The Outsiders was you're getting like former Speedy Arsenal,
right?
Coming in, you have Nightwing, you have Dick Grayson coming back in the Nightwing incarnation.
Yes.
Kind of becoming the Batman. It brings back that dynamic of introducing brand new characters into the DCU as well, because you had these characters like Indigo, I believe was her name.
Mm-hmm.
You had a bunch of characters. You know what the hell they did exactly? what did your power precisely?
Right.
I'm Indigo. Yeah, but okay. And you just went with it. I think one of them may have been an Amazon, if I remember correctly.
There was an Amazon. There was an Amazon. Jade was a member of that team.
That's right. Yes, Jade from the Infinity Incorporated.
Right. The daughter of Alan Scott. The Huntress was subbed in on that particular team. Grace Choi was the Amazon that wasn't an Amazon.
She just played one
on TV, right? That's that was her thing. But yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. This was the 2003 to 2007 incarnation of the Outsiders.
And then, of course, the only seemingly the only charter member of the original Outsiders to return was Metamorpho.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he looked like sort of the crustier, sexed up version of Metamorpho.
Yeah, they really did a number on Metamorpho.
At first blush, it seemed like, okay, you know, here's Metamorpho, but this is like the new version, the grittier,
right,
more realistic. You know, if he was actually cobbled together of component parts, this is what Metamorpho would really look like. It wasn't that sort of polished, semi-symmetrical type of approach. But what was fascinating there, what was really clever, is as the storylines unfold, you discover something really unique about this particular, about Metamorpho.
I think I know where you're going, but keep going.
And that was, you know, unfortunately, about the time I stopped following it, just for various, you know, sort of just falling out of reading anything. But it turns out that Metamorpho of the Outsiders was not... He actually... You encounter Metamorpho.
Right, right.
Metamorpho that you're accustomed to with the more polished look.
Uh-huh.
And the FUD and the... And you're like, okay. And this, I thought, was really clever as they pulled a kind of starfish thing.
Yes.
That at some point, Metamorpho lost a piece.
Yep.
It grew back okay, but unbeknownst to him, they pulled kind of a Bill Riker thing. And now you have a second Metamorpho.
And he went by Shift, if I'm not...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but he was posing as Metamorpho for most of the, you know, the previous incarnation of this, or this book, the previous issues. And then you realize that, and he's not, and the cool thing about Shift was, he's kind of crazy. Because he's only a piece.
Yeah.
So he, like, damages people, hurts people.
Yeah,
like,
it becomes like Michael Keaton in Multiplicity, you know. It
right.
He's not quite the as good as the original.
Eventually, he rebonds with Rex and becomes Metamorpho again because you know, in his...
I guess that could be quite easy to do since, you know, Metamorpho is largely amorphous and
right
in his corporal form.
And because Shift in his... I guess in his kind of infantile, not quite all there because he's just a piece of the whole, manages to kill some people.
Okay, so yeah, it's best just go ahead
and yeah, reassimilate versus being destroyed for your crimes.
Plus, I mean, think about it. He was like an original one percenter, depending on how much Metamorpho he started out from.
That's true, because what
was maybe like a, you know, 17%er, 9%er.
Because wasn't what didn't Rex start as a what did he start as? He was kind of the rich adventurer,
like a gentleman adventurer,
yes,
or something
yes.
like that, and. He had, like, some rich father-in-law, you know, who could finance his endless summer.
He kind of had that Mark Spector thing going on.
Yeah, he was sort of a mercenary adventurer, and but he had some good backing. And then he, like, ran afoul of some ancient Egyptian curse or something.
It happens every time. Every time. Don't go to... Listen, if you're an adventurer... If you're just wanting to go visit, see the pyramids, see the Sphinx, fine, do
it. Tourism is fine, but don't go dicking around with the artifacts. That's
right.
Just,
don't.
That's asking. I mean, that's like begging.
Don't gentleman adventure in Egypt. It's a bad idea.
There are probably safer places to
go. Really, like Oregon. You never hear about the curse.
Away.
Yeah. You never hear about the Bob Dylan curse of Oregon striking anybody. That's just...
Well, that's how Bob Dylan wants it, though. You know?
That's true.
That's a bad example, really, because, you know, that's all hushed up.
That's how Bob Dylan that wants Dylan's... it.
Hashtag, that's how Bob Dylan wants it.
Because that's how Bob Dylan wants it. Do you have any... We're wrapping this up. We're coming up on
it. Yeah, but I really that was one of the things that really kind of, to me, underscored... how successful they were absent Batman.
Right.
Is that they could come back and relaunch and become a new incarnation. And early on, there were so many cool concepts that came out of that. And I think it continued that whole idea the Outsiders were sort of a loosely...
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have the cohesion of the Justice League.
They're definitely a confederation of like-minded individuals that could swap out and move around a lot.
Exactly, and you know, if your pedigree is that your leader gets pissy, disappears himself from the group, then you know you're kind of setting a precedent there,
right?
That anyone can drop out at any time. You know, there literally is no contract.
That's true. You're not, you're not signing on for anything. You're there as long as you need to be there. That's what that is. All right. Well, why don't you wrap us up? We'll get out of here. I think we've done the outsiders the justice that they deserve, because they give us the justice that we deserve. So.
That's right. That they do. So, of course, this Outsiders Pact episode was issue was brought to you by the Jedi Cult Universe at JediCult.com. You can write to us, and please do write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. And we do have the Twitter thing going on, at the Jedi Cult U. We have ideally, in the future, some more video selfie things going on over at the Jedi Cult Universe YouTube account. And, of course, today being Friday, if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, tomorrow, Saturday, the Lost Toys in Dallas is having their grand opening.
Really? Okay.
Yes, indeed. They're having their grand opening event. They've been open for a while now, but they're having they're going all in on 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday. This is at 1451 Empire Central in Dallas, next to a security place. If you're driving along, you think, well, this is a toy store in here. Trust me, they're there. Really great folks there at the Lost Toys. They are so much fun. As part of their grand opening, they're hosting their second swap meet.
Okay.
So, myself, I will be there selling stuff.
Nice.
And in addition, on their behalf, I will be presenting some geek trivia.
Oh, very cool. Good.
For at least once, we're in talks about maybe doing two. During the course of the day. It's 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. I can't say that I'll be there the entire day, but I will likely be there the most of the day because I just love hanging out with these guys. And I was part of their first swap meet, which was the day after the Jedi Cult Universe Comic Toy and Collectible swap meet, ironically. And so you can come out, you can shop their store, and in their store, you can shop more individual toy dealers.
That's so cool.
So, that is pretty amazing stuff. So, you know, come on out. Maybe get in on the game show if you're lucky enough. And we'll be having our traditional random draw to get you into the get our contestants. And we'll have some great geeky trivia and all kinds of fun.
There you go.
So Saturday, October 3rd for your toy buying enjoyment.
What do we got coming up from Hey Kids Comics?
Hey Kids Comics, I think, what is it, next week we're, are we already delving? Yes, next week we are delving into, we're going from teaming up to do it yourself, as it were.
Right, DIY superheroing.
Yes, indeed. This is the long-awaited Wolf Pack of One. We have put this so long on the back burner that it's high time it saw the light of day. The Wolf Pack of One is all of your traditionally, not that they always stay that way 100% of the time, but your traditionally solo hero characters, the Punisher, Batman,
Wolverine,
Daredevil, etc., etc., etc. So we'll be talking about all of your guys who tend to work better on their own, even Captain America.
Right, right.
Green Arrow, Green Lantern, early on.
Right, the antisocial streak that runs in comics.
I kind of started out on my own. I don't really need a bunch of other people hanging out. Or the Jack of Hearts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he was a solo character.
I really like the psychology there.
What are the drives and how varied are they?
Yeah, like what makes somebody want to not be a part of a team and do it by themselves when obviously there are teams of like-minded individuals, one of which we talked about tonight, that are out there willing to join forces with you. Why would you say, I don't want any part of you? I want to do this by myself. And I think I think Batman's a prime example of that, and I'm sure we'll get into that psychosis even further, because we can't get through an episode without talking about the Batman. So yeah, there's that. All right, well, let's get out of here for tonight, and you guys can join us next week when we talk about the Wolf Pack of One. So with that being said, Cole, would you want to say goodnight? Do you want to take us out tonight?
I love to say goodnight.
Shit, here he is. He's back, guys.
I'm back. I've got some cool stuff, and I can't wait for the collector to come around and show him what I collected.
Is it sad? I don't even remember your name. What's your name again?
I don't remember my own name.
All right, everybody.
Listen to the episode to remember my name.
For Cole Houston, myself, and this guy over here, what's your latest collectible, this guy?
This guy over here. What is his latest collectible?
I just got Captain America's shield.
Everybody's got Captain America's shield. That's like an asshole.
Damn it.
Got one. All right. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives.